I'm Jay Morant.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next. Our guest this morning, Andrew Del Monte, Executive Director of Cooperation Buffalo. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
A pleasure. We've got a lot to talk about here. First of all, let's just give me a little bit of background about Cooperation Buffalo. What is it?
Sure. So Cooperation Buffalo, we're a nonprofit organization that was founded in 2016 that focuses on providing training, education, technical support, and also loan capital to people that are looking to start cooperative businesses in Western New York.
So cooperative businesses and people looking to start those, there's a lot there, obviously, to uncover. So let's talk about what exactly do you mean by a cooperative business? And I think what we're talking more specifically about worker-owned cooperative businesses?
That's right. Yeah. So a cooperative business in its modern form can look like so many different things, right? Cooperatives are, in essence, a business enterprise that is owned by a group of members that are all coming together to create some kind of benefit for the group, right? And that can look like everything from a group of small business owners who are pooling resources together to purchase together, right? Like a purchasing cooperative, or like a group of small farmers who are sharing equipment or branding or sort of back office support, right? Upstate Farms is a good example locally of an agricultural cooperative. There's also cooperatives in the real estate sector, right? So a bunch of tenants can co-own a building together, right? In the form of a housing cooperative. And then there are worker cooperatives, like you mentioned, which are where the employees co-own a business enterprise together. So one worker, one vote. And also a share in the profits at the end of the year when it's a good year.
Yeah, I was going to say, right, when it's a good year, when there's profits, right, which is not always the case with smaller businesses. Already, you have some fairly notable success stories to talk about, right?
Yeah. Since we've started, we've helped about 10 new cooperative businesses to get started in the Western New York area. And there's already, you know, a couple dozen cooperatives of various types already in our region. And so a big part of what we're doing is supporting those new ones, but also making sure that we're connecting and building a sort of shared resource network amongst all these co-ops so that they can help each other to build a cooperative economy.
Let's maybe throw it out there, because I'm sure, you know, you have an elevator pitch of sorts, right? You know, when it comes to trying to appeal to people. And I'm sure there's a lot of curiosity about the idea. I mean, I think any worker, no matter what they're involved in, might be intrigued by the idea of maybe becoming a partial owner in what their enterprise. Well, what about that? So what do you say? How do you kind of make that not sale, but that invite of sorts to people?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a couple important points, right? So worker cooperatives and cooperatives more broadly can be any kind of business, right? Any sector, any size. We see all sorts of examples across the country, across the world, of businesses that have this ownership model, right? And you might not even know that a lot of businesses are cooperatives on the surface, especially as a customer interacting with a business. You wouldn't notice much of a difference at all, right? It's just these underpinnings of how it works. There's always got to be a compelling reason for members to co-own something together, right? So sort of finding that reason amongst the members, amongst the workers, is important. For a lot of workers, particularly in sectors where there's low wages, high worker turnover, sometimes exploitation of workers, literally,
sure.
Right? Like,
sure.
Those are often industries where it's really compelling for workers to consider, wait a minute, we could co-own this. We could make decisions about how we do this work in a way that actually is better for us, right? And could also give us a bigger paycheck, right, at the end of the day. So that can be really compelling, particularly in like service sector, care sector, right? So healthcare. There's a great example. One of the largest worker cooperatives in the U.S. is called Cooperative Home Care Associates in the Bronx.
Okay.
They've got 2,000 workers. I think 1,000 plus of them are worker owners. Not everybody participates in the co-op, but most do. And this is a bunch of home health aides, right, who co-own a business together in a sector where the workers usually have very unusual and varying hours, low pay and things like that. And they're doing better than the industry because they're making the decisions about how much to pay themselves and how to operate the business. So that's really compelling. Often.
Absolutely.
There's other examples where sometimes it just practically makes sense. So there's a big movement right now across the country to think about this silver tsunami of retiring boomer age business owners, right? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to all these relatively small, some medium-sized companies that are owned by folks who are 60, 70, 80 years old? And not a lot of them are necessarily going to stay in the family, right? There's not a lot of folks in my generation who are thrilled to continue on with the machine shop, right, that their family has owned for a couple generations. So rather than have these businesses be bought out by private equity, closed down and liquidated, a really compelling option for succession planning here is like, what if the workers who have also been there for several decades and really run these things on the day-to-day, right, were to come together and buy out the business, keep the business open, keep it rooted in that neighborhood where it exists, right, rather than having it be bought and moved somewhere else. And giving those workers much more job security, right, than they've probably ever had in that business. So this conversion or transition to worker ownership is also something we're seeing growing.
As you were talking about that, I thought of a situation. An associate of mine wants to get out of his small business, mm-hmm. right? So what you're saying, and I'm sure, like you said, there's lots of other boomers out there who are, you know, hey, boy, I built this business and my kids don't want it, just like the associate that I was just thinking about. So then the workers are actually purchasing the business then from the owner?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So the workers would form a new cooperative entity most of the time. I mean, there's all sorts of legal and accounting details that we have the experts figure out, right?
Right.
But the concept is they start a new cooperative. That cooperative buys the business, buys the assets, buys the customers, right, from the selling owner who's retiring in this case. And then that new cooperative continues on with the name, with the brand, with doing exactly what that business did. And certainly over time, those workers, maybe they've got some ideas about things they would change.
Of course. But, oh, I bet they do.
Yes. But, you know, it's also good to, in these situations, don't rock the boat too much at first, right? Make this transition an easy one. Help some of these workers step up into positions of leadership, help them learn what it's like to think like an owner, because for some folks who have been working on the shop floor, they may never have really considered themselves capable of being a business owner right before. So there's a lot of sort of education and training pieces, and that's really where we come in with a lot of the support that we offer, is doing that training, working with the new business owners, these worker owners, to devise a governance structure, decision-making model, things like that that are going to work for them.
I may be jumping in too far, too fast, but when you said like the governmental structure, that struck me. Does a co-op have to be, is it a limited liability corporation? What is it necessarily?
It can look like many things.
Okay.
So we in New York State are fortunate that we actually do have an incorporation status on the books called cooperative corporation. So it looks much like a traditional business corporation, but there's some things baked into the bylaws that let the cooperative function in this one worker, one vote, profit sharing kind of model, which is pretty standard. But many cooperatives in other states that don't have this legal form, and even in New York State for various reasons, will form as LLCs or traditional corporations. Really what's important is that the sort of core cooperative values and structure gets baked into your bylaws, your operating agreement as a company.
So that's what makes the key difference in that regard. I'm jumping around. We probably could come back to this, but what about capital? Capital's got to be a big part of that. Is capital generally available for these types of efforts?
That's one of the areas that we're also seeking to serve as Cooperation Buffalo, because traditionally, you know, investors, commercial lenders will look at a situation where, oh, you've got a couple dozen people all owning this business together. That's odd. and it's not an easy sell sometimes for traditional capital. And so there are a number of cooperative lenders. Cooperation Buffalo is part of a national CDFI called Seed Commons, which is one of these lenders that specifically lends to cooperative businesses, and the loan products are designed in a way that works for having multiple owners, right? And one of the biggest things that we don't do that is almost standard across commercial lenders these days is we don't ask one individual to personally guarantee that loan, right? That's usual in the lending world these days. And that doesn't work when you've got 10 owners. Who do you ask to put up their house, right? Or do we each put up 1/10 of our house? You know, it doesn't work that way for co-op. So you've got to design it a little bit differently. Another thing I will say just about sort of the cooperative model, which is really special, but also very revolutionary in some ways, is usually when you're starting a business and some folks are putting money into the business, more money that gets put in equates to more power and decision making at the company, right? If I put in $50,000, you put in $10,000, I'm going to outvote you 5-1 every time, right? And in a cooperative, in any kind of cooperative, that's a really important democratic principle that it's one person, one vote, not $1, one vote. So any investment that's made in the company is treated separately. You know, that investment still is owed back to an individual over time or an entity over time. But at the end of the day, when it comes to deciding how this business operates, who we elect as the manager, things like that, it's one person, one vote. So it's really putting capital to work for people rather than putting people to work for capital, which is what we see in our modern economy so much.
Absolutely. And so just to clarify that, so the, like you were saying, that the capital that's available, that could possibly be available through your agency or you could help make available, would be contingent on the idea that it's one person, one vote.
Yes. That's very true for us.
That's a key element, right? It's a deal breaker.
For us, it is. We're really looking for projects that are solving community problems, that are community owned in some fashion, right? Usually in some kind of democratic governance, which usually boils down to one member, one vote, right? And so we're really strict about that when it comes to the projects that we support with capital. But, you know, there's all sorts of different types of projects that might be cooperative in some way that you know, can certainly access various capital that's out there.
Stay with us. There's more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Public Media is more than Morning Edition and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Buffalo Toronto Public Media creates digital series to ignite curiosity in young learners, free lesson plans, videos, and training for teachers and parents, and events to empower the minds of our community's next generation. This is Public Media.
Hi, I'm Christina. I love exploring the world around me, and I have behind-the-scenes VIP tickets to some of the most exciting places and people in Western New York, and you can come along with me from wherever you are. Let's go! A new series you can watch on WNED PBS, the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel, and on PBS Learning Media nationwide.
So let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go!
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We are talking this morning on What's Next with Andrew Del Monte, the Executive Director of Cooperation Buffalo. And I know one of the things that brought you in at this particular time during the summer is, and this might really intrigue a lot of people who've, I think, heard what you talked about, and it's an intriguing concept for sure. You have a fellowship program, right? Explain how that works.
That's right. So this year we are running a program called our Cooperative Changemakers Fellowship. This is the first year for this fellowship, but it builds off of a program that we've been doing for the past 5 years called a Cooperative Academy. It's a multi-week training program. So 10 weeks starting in early September, running through November, where folks have an opportunity to learn the nuts and bolts of what it looks like to operate a cooperative business, right? In years past, the Cooperative Academy has been strictly for teams of people who have a business idea and you know, want to get that co-op off the ground, right? This year, for the first time, we're sort of broadening the scope for the fellowship, and Cooperative Changemakers is for still those entrepreneurs who are thinking about starting a co-op, but also just folks who, in their own various capacities, want to learn more, want to participate in this cooperative economy that's growing in Western New York. One of the things that we've definitely observed as we've been helping more of these co-ops start is just how important it is to build an ecosystem of support around these businesses so that they can succeed. So we're inviting folks from business support organizations, government, lawyers, accountants, people who are community advocates or activists, right? Folks who in any way are intrigued by this notion of an economy that puts people over profit. And we want to train up more cooperative entrepreneurs in the community. And some of them will go on to start businesses, and some of them might just be the sort of connectors or networkers that help to make these co-ops succeed over time.
And how does an individual, because when you said community activists, I'm picturing the many who have sat right in your very chair here at on our studios here at WBFO. How do they go about getting involved here?
So applications for the fellowship are open right now through August 1st.
Okay.
There's an application form that folks can fill out through our website. Our website is cooperationbuffalo.org, all spelled out. Cooperationbuffalo.org/fellowship is how you access the application. And we will interview everyone who applies, and we're going to sort of select a cohort of probably about 30 or 40 people total to go through the program. But there's no charge. This is all paid for through grants and donations to our nonprofit. It's really about getting more people access to this information, right? Cooperatives are not a new concept by any stretch of the imagination,
right?
Either in principle or in fact, you know, but it's still a very underutilized tool to build community wealth, right? And so we want to build more of a network of people that know about it. So check out the application online, cooperationbuffalo.org, for folks that want to sign up.
Yeah, we can most certainly circle back and find out more. But boy, as you're talking, I have a sense that you can fill in a lot of blanks for me here in terms of context. But you know, like you said, it's not a new concept by any means. So let's get into maybe the history of it just a little bit. Talk about a little bit about where it was, how it emerged, and maybe how it's gone through the waves of ups and downs through history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something I love talking about, so you'll have to keep me on track.
We'll do the best we can.
So I what I'll start by saying is when someone says the word cooperative right now, one of the first things that often comes to mind, and one of the sort of misnomers I have to set aside, is a cooperative is not just a place where me, as a young white person, is going to go to buy overpriced healthy granola, right?
Like, right.
and those cooperative grocery stores are wonderful, but that really is sort of one of the most visible.
An image that people might have.
Okay. Yes,
okay,
yes. Gotcha. And, right. So Lexington Cooperative in the city, East Aurora Food Co-op. There's a group that's trying to start another grocery co-op in Williamsville right now. So that's one type of cooperative. But cooperatives have more often than not been a common economic strategy, particularly for folks who have been marginalized or not welcome into the mainstream economy over time, right? So in Buffalo, we've got a really rich history, particularly in the Black community, of economic cooperation, really out of necessity, right? Out of not being welcome. In Buffalo, one of the earliest sort of documented cooperative initiatives was something called the Citizens Cooperative Society that later became known as the Buffalo Cooperative Economic Society. They were started in 1928. By a physician named Dr. Ezekiel Nelson, with the idea that economic cooperation was going to change the Black condition in Buffalo. And he wasn't the only one. This is something that W.E.B. Du Bois wrote and talked a lot about as well. And Citizens Cooperative Society opened a grocery store. They had a federal credit union at one point. Credit unions are another example of a cooperative business, right? We're all pooling our money together.
I'm a member of one, proud member.
As am I, yeah. And they also had a really robust educational program, not kind of unlike, you know, what we're trying to develop now at Cooperation Buffalo. And they existed for 30 plus years, all the way till about 1960. And their whole organization's archive, which is really special, is at Buff State in the Monroe Fordham collection in the library. So anyone who wants to learn more about that little piece of Buffalo's co-op history, there's actually quite a bit to read on microfilm. You know, you got to
do that. Sure.
So that's one example. Another example in Buffalo's history is the Echo, or East Side Community Cooperative, which was another cooperative grocery store started in the Black community. 1968, they started as a buying club. So this is just a bunch of families that wanted to purchase fresh, healthy food together, right? And By 1971, they were able to open up a store on William Street. I think it later moved to Genesee, if I'm remembering that correctly. And this was actually something that there was some federal poverty initiative money that was used to support the opening of that store. Grocery stores are not cheap to get started, right?
No.
but they, you know, they served the community for a number of years there during civil rights era, right? And then another little blip on the Buffalo Co-op history train is something that unfortunately has been brought more to the fore in the past few years. So that the Top supermarket on Jefferson, right, that was the site of that horrendous white supremacist massacre a couple years ago. The effort to get a grocery store in that neighborhood, which was a food desert or food apartheid, was sort of intentional that there was not a supermarket in the area. There was a really robust community organizing effort to open up a community-owned grocery store as one of the options to get a grocery store in that neighborhood. It was going to be called Our Market. There were several hundred people who signed petitions. They received some promises of funding from the city that I don't think ever came through. Politics are what they are. But they actually commissioned a market study for the area that actually showed that there was a need and what people would buy. And you can draw a pretty direct line between that community organizing effort to start a cooperatively owned grocery store to Tops deciding to come in eventually, right, and build that supermarket and receive a bunch of state funding to do so. Can you imagine if we had a couple million dollars of state funding to support a community-owned grocery store instead? So even though that cooperative didn't come to be, it's another really good example of how organizing cooperatives is also helping to solve
that energy is why Tops is over on Jefferson Avenue.
It's a big part of it.
Wow. That's a fascinating piece of background. Since we're talking history, who's against co-ops? What are the stumbling blocks? And how come I get the feeling that there are, I don't want to say a lot, but there are probably strong forces that maybe might not exactly embrace the model?
When it comes to folks embracing the model, a lot of it has to do with culture, right? And particularly in the U.S., when we talk about worker cooperatives, which is what we focus on a lot at Cooperation Buffalo, there's just such a culture of individualism when it comes to our economy, right? And this notion that I individually am going to pull myself up by my bootstraps and I'm going to start a small business for myself and one day I'll get rich as the owner of that business. And that is just so much a part of the sort of American story that is told, right? Cooperatives as a business model are actually far more common in other parts of the world, particularly the global south, also portions of Europe. There's a whole region in Spain, Arrasate, where there's the Mondragon cooperatives, which is dozens of cooperatives that employ tens of thousands of people. They're all worker-owned businesses, many of them industry, manufacturing, right? So really sort of productive enterprises. And this whole town, this whole region is almost 100% worker-owned businesses. Really remarkable, right?
Yes.
Kind of hard to picture that in our country, but certainly very possible, you know? And I think the biggest detractors will say that, like, oh, you know, democracy slows things down, right? Like, if you've got everybody with one vote at the business, how are you going to get anything done? And like I said earlier, so many of these cooperative businesses on the surface look and act just like any other business, right? There's often still a hierarchy. There's people in management.
They need to make a profit.
There's a board. Mm-hmm. They need to compete. They need to make a profit, right? So, you know, everybody's not voting on what color the business cards are going to be, right? You still have to have some efficiencies. And so I think, and also empowering people to really, you know, develop the skills to work together, which is not something that we teach a lot in, even in our public school system. You know, it's like, think about the last group project you worked on and how hard that probably was, right? Like these are skills that are not necessarily taught, right? And so like bringing people together to form an entity where they're going to have to work together. They're going to have to sit around a boardroom table together and make decisions and also still go do their day-to-day work at the company. These are things that folks need a little help in. And so organizations like ours exist across the country and across the world that kind of serve as that resource library to help folks do this and to get that little boost to help it actually work.
You know, we've been talking about the history of co-ops, but where does that history stand right now nationally? Mm-hmm. What do we see?
We actually see a substantial increase in cooperative, particularly worker cooperatives in the U.S. right now for the last 10, 15 years, ever really since the 2008 recession. And this is common. There's always an uptick of these alternative economic projects in moments of economic instability on the broad scale, right? So the Citizens Cooperative Society that I talked about, that really thrived right in the moment when the Great Depression hit, right? And certainly the times of unrest and economic unrest around civil rights was another moment when the cooperative model was used a lot by folks. And so we're in another age of incredible instability economically, and folks are looking for more ways to find that security that is increasingly hard to find in the workforce or in, you know, in industry, right? And so this model is, it's taking root again. And so we're members of a national organization called the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives that does a census that tries to track as many of these worker-owned businesses across the country as we can. You know, it's an imperfect science for sure. But we've seen, I'm going to get the number wrong, but it has grown by at least 50% in the past 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, is there a part of the country that it seems to be more popular than others?
Certainly larger metropolitan areas have more of a concentration, right? There's several dozen worker cooperatives and probably well over 100 cooperatives in general in New York City area. It's also very popular in California. The Bay Area has a concentration. But it'll vary place to place.
Okay.
For sure.
I can only imagine after just talking with you here for the last half hour or so that you have co-op on your mind 24/7, and obviously you're very well versed in not only its history but its operations. I would have to think that when you're walking down the street and you're seeing a business or you're seeing a company or whatever the case may be, you probably say, that could be a co-op. That should be a co-op. Couldn't that be a co-op?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? And I mean, you know, you don't necessarily have to get into specifics, but maybe just give me an idea how, you know, yeah, you see it and you're like, boy, there's a real potential here for this. And not only to help the workers, but also maybe something that could maybe be a better enterprise than the one that's currently there.
You're right. I'm always thinking about that. Could probably use some other things to think about in my day-to-day. But it's true. You know, there's, as I mentioned earlier, right, cooperatives exist in just about every industry, just about every size of business, right? So there's no, there's so many opportunities,
sure.
Right? And that is something that I and our team often look toward is like, are there levers that we can pull to maybe help advance this or to take a business that might be floundering a little bit or that might, you know, have questions about its future if an owner is looking to retire and see if we can like be that spark that leads to something. Our organization is a little unique, I think, in the sense that we try to be a bridge between both the sort of community organizing and activist world and the more traditional business and economic development world, right? We're a small team of four people that really know the technical assistance aspects of how to help get a co-op off the ground. But we can't go into every neighborhood and organize communities to identify what are your economic needs? Is there a cooperative that could be started? So we really rely on our partners in community organizing and community building to sort of identify those projects, those needs. Maybe it's an existing business in the neighborhood. Maybe it's something new that folks need, right? I'll give you an example of where our office is located on the west side of Buffalo, which is always the sort of entry point for new immigrants,
right?
It was my Italian-American immigrant family 100 years ago came through the west side too, and my parents still live there. And so the growing language needs, right, has definitely identified a need for more people that do language interpretation, right, so that folks can access services and things like this. And this is actually a pretty common cooperative business that we see in other parts of the country too, where you form a cooperative of interpreters, right? So it's a service business essentially, but it's folks who do the language interpretation. And so that's a need that recently we've been talking to some community partners about, like, is there a group of folks that are ready to start a business like this? There's definitely a community need. There's an opportunity to build wealth for folks to co-own a business together doing this, right? And there's probably a market for it because there's lots of languages that need to be spoken. So we're always looking for those ways to use this cooperative model to create positive change in the community.
So you're not going to get into specific businesses that you see, but I'm sure that you do. But I'm glad that at least you admitted that you do see that. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're talking with Andrew Del Monte, the Executive Director of Cooperation Buffalo, this morning on What's Next. All right, let's talk then about some of those success stories that we're seeing. It's interesting, of course, you mentioned how you're on the West Side, and I think at least some of these cases, if I'm not mistaken, are on the West Side.
Yeah. Yeah. Cooperatives incubate other cooperatives, right?
Right.
So the first worker co-op to launch in Western New York in a number of years was Bread Hive Worker Cooperative Bakery about 10 years ago now. They're a bakery and a cafe that has, I think, over 20 workers at this point. And they're located on Connecticut Street on the West Side, right? My cooperative background is I lived and worked and co-governed in the Nickel City Housing Cooperative, which is a housing co-op of a couple dozen people who own and manage two properties together, right, where they live. And that's also the two houses for Nickel City are on the west side of Buffalo as well. Over the past couple of years, some of the projects we've supported have also sort of sprung up in similar or adjacent neighborhoods, right? So a good example is the Healing Grounds Cooperative, which is a new cafe that's opened just within the past year on the corner of Grant and Lafayette, where Sweetness 7 Cafe used to be
right,
for any...
Of course.
West Siders
great
out
place,
there.
Yeah.
And the Healing Grounds picked up where Sweetness left off, right? They're a great sort of neighborhood cafe. And they're also owned by the baristas that work at the store. So we help them with their business model. We help them get started. We help them access capital to buy equipment that they needed to get going. Businesses like cafes, like the Healing Grounds, like Bread Hive, people come in, they interact with the workers there. It seeds new ideas for folks, right?
Okay.
So they're very public ways to talk about the co-op idea. Another business that actually participated in our fellowship a few years back is Extra Extra Pizza and Wine Bar, which is over on West Utica. And they're a worker-owned and managed tipless pizzeria. They also have wine. They also have ice cream.
Mm.
Very good New York style pizza.
New York style.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll mark that one down.
Started by folks who are in the restaurant industry who are sick and tired of how messed up that industry is and say, you know what, if we could, be workers that are co-owning this together, we're going to make better decisions and have better jobs for ourselves too.
Right.
So they're another great example. Another example, not on the West Side, this is a citywide cooperative, and actually an example of one of these conversions or transitions to worker ownership is Farmer Pirates Compost. So this is a business that does compost pickup at people's houses, right? They also do compost pickup for commercial businesses. I think they pick up compost food scraps from top supermarkets in the area. They pick up the food scraps. They have a compost site over on the east side where the food scraps are processed into soil, and then they also sell that soil in the community too. And this is a business that's been around for, I think, 9 or 10 years at this point. It started as a small LLC of a couple owners, and those owners felt really passionately that they wanted to open up ownership to everyone at the business. And so they decided to stay on, but convert the business to a worker cooperative. So instead of a couple owners, I think they now have 6 or 7 co-owners who are workers at the business they're the ones picking up food scraps, alongside the trash and recycling pickups on your trash day in the city. They recently got a really great grant through the city of Buffalo to be able to do residential pickup on trash days for folks this year. So they've greatly expanded their operation just this past year too.
So, when you talk about Farmer Pirates, I mean, it's an example not only of, an opportunity for workers, mm-hmm. but also a key service for, mm-hmm. anybody who has any kind of awareness of environmental issues would say, that is, is that something that you see? There are other niches ready to be explored like that by maybe cooperative efforts?
I don't think it's a coincidence that many cooperative businesses have very strong social and environmental goals, right? When you put average everyday people, the working class, into positions of power, we're going to make better decisions for our communities and neighborhoods, right? Rather than shareholders who are just concerned with, sucking as much money out of the community as they can, right? I'm being a little dramatic there, but you get,
yes.
So Farmer Pirates is a group of passionate folks who understand that there are real needs for doing something with our food waste, right? That climate issues are everyday issues for all of us and becoming more so these days, right? And also particularly in Buffalo, one of the great things that Farmer Pirates is able to do as a result of the work that they've created for themselves is they're remediating soil, right? This rich compost that they're putting back into City Gardens, right? When I purchase a bag of compost from them, I'm helping to solve the problems of so much lead and toxicity in the soil right. that is unsafe for young people in our communities, right? And so this is also like a health aspect that they're addressing too through the business. And so it's not just about, the examples of cooperatives, I think, range from sometimes improving worker conditions are a real reason why workers start worker cooperatives, right? So that they can have control over their livelihoods, but also it's to solve these community problems as well. And another, one please, other quick please, example I'll give you is like bringing it back to some of that co-op history we talked about, particularly in the Black community, right? So another cooperative we've worked with over the past couple of years is called Mondragon Village Association. That Mondragon is a callback to the region in Spain with the Mondragon cooperatives. And this is a group of Black folks who want to own and manage real estate together with the idea that they're going to preserve affordable housing in the community and build wealth for themselves as Black folks who, you know, we could look at all the statistics, sure. right, usually have far less family sustaining wealth and access to that because of all the reasons in our modern society. And so
how are they doing?
They're doing well. They've got just one property right now. We helped them secure that property a couple of years ago. They're growing at their own pace, but it's a group of 10 people that have started small and, right. and certainly.
But you can most certainly see, and we've talked about housing issues on the East Side frequently on this program, and you most certainly could see how something like that could be a huge benefit to that community.
Right. And it's another example of this cooperative business model being used also as a way to address a really serious community problem at the same time.
When it comes to the co-op, the worker co-op concept, are there policies, city level, state level, federal level, that could be altered, changed, improved upon that would assist this a little bit better?
Certainly. We've just recently, actually, the Department of Labor has launched a new, I'm going to get the exact name of it wrong, but they've launched an employee ownership initiative officially at the national level. So I think we're going to start to see a little bit more attention paid to these issues. And a number of years ago, we and other advocates successfully pushed for something called the Main Street Employee Ownership Act, which also was a mandate for the federal government through the Small Business Administration, the SBA, to provide more education and resources for employee ownership, worker ownership of businesses. Of course, that was a legislative mandate, not a budgetary concerns.
Sure.
So it's easy to say, yeah, do more with less, you know, so we certainly could have more money going to initiatives like this. Some states, so at the state level, some of the states have what are called employee ownership centers, where this concept of worker ownership or employee stock ownership plans, which are also another mode of employee ownership that you'll see in some larger companies. These are resource centers where businesses and business owners can go and develop plans to do these things. We don't have one of those centers in New York State. So that's definitely something that we would want the legislature to look into at the state level. And then there are many examples in other municipalities of county and city governments grabbing this opportunity by the horns, right? And saying like, look, this is a way to alleviate poverty. This is a way to put more people into good jobs in our communities, and backing that up with actual municipal dollars.
You are seeing that in other counties, other municipalities?
New York City as one example,
okay,
although
one.
They're definitely, you know,
yeah,
in a world
of
them all themselves,
yeah,
but for a number of years, the city's been putting millions of dollars into cooperative business development intentionally.
What about from a scale standpoint, any other places like Buffalo or Erie County that might be having some success in that area?
Madison, Wisconsin has really robust program that has been connected to the city for a while. There's a few others that aren't coming to the top of my head. But certainly, scale makes a difference.
Right.
But certainly, like, this is something that would directly address many of the needs in our community too, right? Wages are really low. You look at the, you know, how much folks earn in the city proper in Buffalo, and it's We can do more to share the wealth than we're doing right now.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us today. This is What's Next on WBFO. More to come right after this.
Hey, people. Corey here with Compaq Civics. If you're from Western New York, you know snow. And unfortunately, you know how damaging those annoying potholes can be. But do you know what's involved in filling those potholes so your car tires can stay intact? Let me put you on. Because maintaining roads involves way more than the average citizen might think. Cities, counties, and states take part in this process. Why, you might ask? Well, A state might be responsible for filling potholes and paving, but a city handles snow plowing and de-icing. These responsibilities are shared among elected officials, road managers, supervisors, and other essential personnel, all so you can drive safely. Try and imagine a city or town without a public works department. No one to manage public buildings like schools or hospitals, or maintain infrastructure we rely on, like roads, bridges, and airports. Can't forget about essential public services like water and sewage. And when those summer months hit, you can forget about public spaces we enjoy, like parks and beaches. We deserve these spaces, and our taxes pay for it all. So, next time you drive across a smooth road or see a snowplow clearing one, appreciate it. Public works are the backbone of what keep our communities and quality of life thriving.
Special thanks to our partners, the Buffalo Presidential Center, whose mission is to explore and share stories about Buffalo and Western New York's contributions to the U.S. presidency and national affairs.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
Andrew Del Monte is with us. He's the executive director of Cooperation Buffalo, and I've enjoyed the conversation immensely. We can maybe flash back into history and specifics and things along those lines, but I want to make sure that we highlight a fun date that's coming up here. We've got a little bash happening in September.
That's right. A little end of summer bash we're calling Co-op Fest.
Co-op Fest. Very nice.
We're going to be, this is Saturday, September 7th. So it'll still be warm in September because it has been for the past few years. And we're going to be outdoors at Five Points Bakery over on Brayton Street on the west side. And this is just going to be a fun event where we're bringing as many of the Buffalo and Western New York co-ops together. Co-ops will be there tabling, offering their wares, offering their food and drink, because we've got a lot of food businesses that are cooperatives. We'll have live music, drinks, games for the kids. And it's going to be a way both for our cooperatives to network with each other, right? But also for the broader community to be able to meet some of these cooperative business owners, learn more about the model, and do some of this relationship building that's really important to a strong cooperative economy.
You know, we talked before we went on the air a little bit, Andrew, you grew up on the West Side. You went away to college and sought a career elsewhere for a brief time, and then you find your way back. But in your 30-plus years, you've seen a lot of changes on the West Side.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. You know, let's talk about that a little bit. I shared my experience and went to Buff State and was a commuter through that area a lot 40-some years ago. Yeah. So most certainly it's always been kind of startling to go back at different times in those four decades of a lot of changes in that area. Let's just talk about that, because it does seem to kind of reflect what we're seeing right now. Kind of there's maybe a coinciding vibe between what you're trying to do and what we are seeing in reality on the West Side.
Mm. Yeah. One thing I'll say about my 30 plus years of watching and being a part of the West Side is just a constant change, right? Like there's always new influxes of folks coming from different cultures and backgrounds, right? It's definitely this like immigrant and refugee hub, as it has been historically. The business districts have gone up and down. You know, I lived a couple blocks away from Grant Street. It was not in great shape at certain points in my childhood. It had a little moment of renaissance maybe 5-10 years ago. And I think ever since the pandemic, again, when a lot of these small local businesses closed, it's been struggling a little bit more since. And so I think those waves are naturally going to happen. And one sort of common thread I draw from that experience to the sort of cooperative model is local businesses are going to, especially the small mom and pops, right, are always going to open and close, right? It's less about the individual business succeeding and more about the community as a whole having enough of what it needs to thrive, right? And so long as we're creating a sort of symbiosis where enough of these things are happening in tandem and things close, things open, things become less important to the community, things become more important to the community, we can still have a neighborhood that is whole, you know? And I think about that a lot in terms of cooperatives too, where it's like, okay, you've got many people co-owning something together. They're going to help to define what that is based on their needs, right? And those needs are going to change over time. Some people are going to leave the co-op. Some people are going to come into the co-op. Some people are going to go into new careers. But overall, that business is going to stay where it is. It's going to serve a neighborhood and its current needs, right? And it's less prone to up and leaving or taking wealth out of the community because it's the ecosystem that's helping people meet their needs. And so right. I look at business districts, I look at cooperatives, I look at, community activists who are knocking on doors to get people organized to ask for what they need. And it's all part of the work. The work doesn't end
right,
by
right.
any stretch of the imagination.
Right. Yeah. It's really a fascinating element to all of this. It's interesting. I'm trying to frame this. I've been thinking about this throughout. It's been, I'm very familiar with a lot of people who have this idea of local first, right? In that, the world, the economy, the way the economy generates, it's always kind of expanding. Like you said, it's taking wealth out of communities and, moving elsewhere. And, we can go back and forth about which political party maybe embraces this in their own way. But I guess what I'm wondering, and from a person who's doing this, do you see this as being a model that's going to help move forward? You mentioned it before about climate change and environmental mm-hmm. concerns, that, this model, this co-op model is one that's really needed to really help make communities, especially an overall poor city like Buffalo, mm-hmm. that this is the way forward.
I certainly believe that way. Right. And I'll say two things. Yes. First, interestingly, especially this concept of employee ownership of businesses, it's a very bipartisan issue. You'll have Democrats, you'll have Republicans right. who see this as a way to promote small business and create jobs, right? And so it's actually remarkably not that contentious to talk about, which is wonderful.
And this very really? I found one thing I can talk about now.
In this very polarized age, that for some reason, employee ownership is universally right. seen as a good thing. So that's the first thing I'll say. Second thing.
That's probably the most encouraging thing I've heard in a long time, but continue.
second thing I'll say, we've got a lot of things to fix right now. And I do firmly believe that putting people in positions where they can have more say over their lives and livelihoods is what's going to right the ship, right? We've got so many people who we elect, once every 4 years we go to the ballot box. That's our democracy, right? And then we have to sit back and hope that those people have our best interests while they, do all their stuff and talk to all their donors and all these things. And we see the results of that, right? But if there are more ways for everyday people to really do democracy on a day-to-day basis, right? Democracy at the workplace, which is what worker ownership is all about. I actually have a say in my workplace. It's so ridiculous to me that we say we live in a democracy, and then for the most important 40 hours of our work weeks, we check that at the door and enter into a dictatorship where there's one boss who tells us what to do. And it's not that extreme at, there's many good workplaces out there, but we really don't have a say. We really can't vote out the board or the boss if we disagree with them. And we can do better than that. If we want to be a democracy, let's practice that every day. So the everyday democracy at the workplace also translates to everyday democracy in our communities too, right? Notions like participatory budgeting, where we as citizens can have more direct control and decision making over where the money goes, right, that the city or the county has access to, are ways that we can start to practice that democracy on an everyday level. And that's cooperativism, right? It's not a cooperative business exactly, but it's that same concept of many people actually having a say over what happens. And I believe that if the everyday people, the citizens, have more control over these things, we're going to make better decisions for our neighborhoods and our communities. So let's try it,
Yeah. So Andrew, how about in terms of needs, what about Cooperation Buffalo? Mm-hmm. I got to admit, I didn't know anything much about it until Charles Gilbert, our producer, brought it to my attention recently. So, it's a great concept. It addresses a lot of the issues that we have talked about here on What's Next. So what does Cooperation Buffalo need? What are the next steps for Cooperation Buffalo?
You're right. I think our heads are down so much doing the work with the businesses that we're not good about talking about ourselves as mm-hmm. much. So certainly, please spread the word about cooperatives and our what we offer to folks. We need several things. We need more cooperatives and more worker owners, right? So that folks, if you're at all interested, definitely reach out to us. Consider signing up for the fellowship program, that where applications are open through August 1st right now, to learn more and to see if this, you know, part of the economy is something you want to engage more in. We also just need more supports and more ecosystem supports for this cooperative economy to really thrive. So come out to Co-op Fest, right, on September 7th, and meet the co-ops and hang out with us and build community, right? This is, co-ops are all about like being a part of a community together with people. Right. So let's practice that, right? We're a nonprofit organization, so we are always seeking grants and donations, right? Right now we're trying to do a little individual donor campaign. Between now and the end of the year, we're trying to raise $10,000. So if anybody has some extra dollars to share, if this is something that, you know, you're not going to start a co-op business, but you've got something to share with us, we'll take it.
Right, right.
Because that's how we are able to offer all of these great services to the co-op businesses we work with. So cooperationbuffalo.org/donate. You can donate through PayPal really easily. We're always looking for monthly sustainer donors, right? Folks who are going to do a recurring donation, because that's just allows us to have a more predictable budget for the work that we do, right? And certainly, I think more advocacy and visibility for the cooperative model in general, right? So if this is something you believe in, but not something you're going to go do tomorrow, like still talk to your people about it. You know, this is a great way to do business. It's a great way to engage the community and providing services that are really relevant to our neighbors. And let's talk about it more.
And it probably wouldn't hurt to have the general public support some of these cooperative businesses, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And
yes.
we've mentioned a few. Actually, it wouldn't be a bad idea to mention re-mention some of the folks that we've talked about in the program. Why don't you just go through them, if you don't mind?
Right, right. So there's the Healing Grounds Cafe on Grant Street, the Bread Hive Worker Cooperative Bakery on Connecticut Street, Extra Extra Pizzeria, the Farmer Pirates Compost, who do residential and commercial food scraps pickup, and they sell soil. There's the Mondragon Village Association that I mentioned, right, that is a real estate cooperative. There's the Nickel City Housing Cooperative that I'm a former member of, that is always looking for new residents for their two houses. Goodness, there's so many. Okay. The Arts Cafe in Springville, another example of a worker-owned
Arts Cafe in Springville. I've heard of it. Very good. As a matter of fact, I think my colleague, Dallas Taylor, did some performance work down at the Arts Cafe. Oh, that's nice to hear. Out in Springville, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How's that doing? As best you understand.
Well as I understand, yeah.
How about that? Yeah. And so your organization's not just going to help businesses or co-ops in Buffalo?
Our hyper focus is definitely on folks who have been excluded from the mainstream economy.
Right.
So often that means folks in the city of Buffalo in our poorer neighborhoods. But, you know, we will offer our resources to anybody, right? Even if we can't do a lot of like handholding work with the business, say it's in, you know, Niagara Falls or Rochester or something, but certainly contacts, relationships, resources we can share.
And, you know, we did touch upon it a little bit, but are you finding that community activists interest from the east side? I mean, are we seeing that?
Yes.
I mean, again, you know, you mentioned that some that have moved forward, but are you're maybe seeing signs of percolating possibilities in the east side?
I mean, always the issues on the east side are many and varied, right? But and some are very serious,
of course.
And so worker cooperatives may not be the first thing people jump to when there's not even a lot of locally owned businesses in some neighborhoods anymore.
But do you see then that maybe being that possibility, though, that a new business could be a cooperative-owned business?
Oh, certainly, certainly.
On
and
the east
and
side,
to your point earlier about how prevalent housing issues are on the east side, I think the housing co-op model is an area where we're seeing a lot of interest in, like, how can the community own and preserve affordability in these neighborhoods and take back some control over the land, right? So yeah, definitely. And of course, there's I neglected to mention them earlier, but the African Heritage Food Co-op, with many years project that started as a buying club, is soon going to be opening a grocery store on Carlton Street, all about providing fresh and healthy foods to that neighborhood.
And again, the fellowship, the deadline is coming up. So let's make sure we mention once more the fellowship program that's coming.
Yes, Cooperative Changemakers Fellowship. It's a free 10-week training and fellowship program. Starts in September, ends in November. Applications are due August 1st. So if you're at all interested, go to cooperationbuffalo.org, fill out the application form, get in our pool, because we'll be reaching out to everybody. That's a great way to just learn the nuts and bolts, to get some real basic understanding of this and how individuals from various backgrounds can kind of plug into this work.
It's not necessarily a commitment that you're going to do it. You just, it's a chance to learn more. And
the commitment we ask is stay involved in the cooperative economy at the end, whatever that looks like. Maybe you're going to be a co-op entrepreneur yourself. Maybe you're just going to be an advocate for it.
And then I guess the final thing, I mean, we talk about who does this, but I guess, is there a personality type or a spirit inside a person that just seems to be the type that you're made for this? I mean, I know it's kind of a tough question to hit, but there seems to be, you know, I think sometimes, you know, when it comes to civics, we talk about civics and, you know, the civic spirit that'll lead us forward. And, you know, it's a nice kind of American myth that is based on some fact for sure. Mm-hmm. But what about for the co-op person? What do we see there?
Again, because there are co-ops in so many different sectors, many different cultures, it's hard to pinpoint. But one thing I've definitely observed is a common thread is you really have to believe that we can do more together than we can do on our own. Like if that
and
is
there
a
are a lot of people
that
who believe
hold,
that.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. If that's a value that you hold and you want to practice expressing it, this is for you, for sure.
Find out more about co-ops. And the best place to do that, or one of the places to do it, is Cooperation Buffalo. Again, the website?
CooperationBuffalo.org.
Fantastic. Andrew Del Monte, Executive Director of Cooperation Buffalo, thanks very much for joining us today on What's Next.
Thank you.
This is What's Next on WBFO and WBFO HD1 Buffalo, WOLN Olean, and WUBJ Jamestown, your NPR station.